2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
And you're very welcome to the programme. It is Wednesday, the 17th of February.
Coming up today on Game On, Galway United's Lisa Fallon talks Champions League, Europa League and English Premier League.
And then Ronaldo! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo! Sensational!
The Irish cricket captain Andrew Balbirnie will talk about a topsy-turvy and busy season ahead.
Yeah! Bowling! An Ireland win, the ICC World 2020 qualifying event 2013.
As Tennis Australia Open gets to the business end, we get the lowdown from Stephen Higgins.
It's unbelievable feeling. Of course, it's first time playing, first time semis. It's incredible. It was really tough from the beginning for me to hold the nerves, and this was really tricky, and then I tried to play already in the second set. I tried to find a way how to play, and yeah, and then in the third set he fell.
We'll also be talking to four of the best hurlers in the country.
Horgan, he's taking it away towards the uncovered stand on the far side. He's getting encouragement to hit it long. He knows that that has gone straight between the posts, and he has put Glen Rovers 3 points in front.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On 2FM.
How are you?
I'm great, Damien. Yourself?
I tell you, I'm a bit taken aback. I wasn't expecting to hear the great Pat McAuliffe's voice in the opener.
Exact so same thing just hit me there.
Yeah, the late great Pat McAuliffe.
Yeah, just such a great to have around the place. A gentleman, every time he interviewed you, always really wishing you the best of luck.
Yeah,
that really dropped me there too.
Pat passed away suddenly. Are we closing in on 2 years, maybe? Certainly. Anyway, and I remember going through my phone and seeing text messages from him, and every text message was, good luck today, good luck today, have a good one today, well done on this. So, an inherently decent person.
Absolutely.
How are you this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday evening?
Yes, exactly. It's a bit like that. I think the O'Callaghans were glad to get to midterm, but I'll be honest with you now, Damien, we're kind of craving the routine of school, so get us back on Zooms and calls and whatever we can to get back to a bit of routine, because our kids at the moment are looking at us going, what's next? You know,
we were involved in a text conversation yesterday, and you and I on WhatsApp, and the great Dublin Cork divide extended to the fact that my kids aren't on midterm until tomorrow and Friday.
Yeah.
So, but we've had the same thing where this week has just been, do I really have to do this? I'm so tired.
I don't want to
do this. Do I have to do 3 sentences? Can I do 1 sentence? Can I colour this in later?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do I really need to record this and send it back on Seesaw?
And I openly say it. I think it's not a bad idea that the schools are closed just for a little bit longer till we kind of start getting over the hump a little bit more, because every teacher I see, Damien, I'm hugging and thanking at the moment.
It was suggested to me earlier on by somebody who has farm. Like, I've got how many? I've got two. You've got.
We've four.
Oh,
well,
my
Jenny
God.
Slags that she is five when you include myself.
Poor Jenny. Yeah, I was chatting to somebody earlier who has five kids, and they were saying that they would quite happily forego their vaccination if it comes to give it to the kids to get the schools back. That
give it
bit
to
early.
The teacher.
Do you know? Can I just say on a serious note? So, not to bore people with the intricacies of broadcasting, but you're in the Cork studios.
Yes,
I'm in the basement of the radio centre in Donnybrook. I arrived in here at whatever shortly before 5 o'clock, and I say for the first 10 minutes, I sat in pure, unadulterated silence.
Yeah.
All I could hear in the background was there's a clock over my left shoulder, and I could just hear this gentle little tick, tick, tick. And I was thinking to myself, I have forgotten what silence sounds like.
We'll get you out of it. We'll get you out of it. There is plenty of sport going on, isn't it? It was a great night last night, plenty going on, and I know Marie will be delighted that Liverpool are back on winning ways.
Do you know, it's going to be the most Liverpool thing ever to qualify for the Champions League by winning the Champions League and not finishing in the top four.
Yeah, I was saying to her, it is a great line for a Liverpool fan to go around and say, yeah, it was a really disappointing year just winning the Champions League.
Yeah.
So,
the, like, We'll chat to Lisa Fallon in a second, but there was a touch of, like, they looked really good last night. I felt very sorry, and I'm sure you've been in this situation at some point. I felt very sorry for Jurgen Klopp in his press conference on Monday. You know, obviously these rumours circulated over the weekend that he was taking a break, and I was kind of thinking at one point, when I saw him getting so emotional about them conceding the league, I was kind of thinking, I hope there's somebody around the upper echelons of the club who's putting an arm around his shoulder the way he's renowned for putting an arm around other people's shoulders. But he was, it's difficult to have to open and bare your soul in a press conference like that, knowing that the clips are going to go around, you know, the internet and the world and everything else.
And it's the hardest role, Damien. It really is. Like, everyone goes on about the coaches and they take so much of the flack, but they guide the ship and you take on their traits and their values. So I've always noticed that about coaches I've had. They've nearly influenced the group to be like them, you know. So when they're down, you know, they can nearly bring the whole group down. And he's gone through personal tragedy and everything, and to be able to still be, I know this sounds really harsh, but to be professional and to get the job done like that last night was quite incredible. So you know, I think so much of the times we actually can forget about the people within it.
And exactly.
I think that's probably the case with James McLean as well at the moment.
You've robbed the segue I was going to throw at you.
Go on, go for it.
Yeah, like, so James McLean has spoken very openly in the past about the difficulty that he has encountered on social media and the threats and the issues around not wearing the poppy and the onslaughts that he's had. I thought I kind of understood what it was he was facing, but until I heard, not necessarily James, but until I heard his wife on with Claire Byrne this morning, and you're thinking, this is the mother of three kids under seven who's trying to explain to her kids why daddy is booed everywhere he goes. And, you know, to hear James McLean talk about his reluctance to get into photographs with people because you never really know what's around the corner.
It was incredible to hear his wife Erin speaking this morning with Claire Byrne. And you're right, Damien. I think so many times we look at Claire's and, you know, we just give the he's well paid or, you know, he's living his dream. But it's his family there. And you're right, they're chatting about their seven-year-old be nervous about going down to the shops with dad because everywhere they go he gets abused.
Yeah, let's hear a little bit of Erin from Today with Claire Byrne this morning.
I just think at the minute in the media, you know, it's the abuse for players between racism and everything else is being really spoken about, and James has spoken out for years and I feel like he hasn't really got the support he properly needed, whereas I see all our players are, which I'm glad to see. It's great to see. Someone messaged James's brother this morning and just said, rather than burning down the family home, they would rather tie James to a chair and set him on fire and tie me and the kids up and make us watch it.
How do you get up in the morning when that's what you deal with?
Yeah, it is incredible. I find it shocking that someone can say something like that. You know, like, it is brilliant to have the access to these social media platforms, but I think there needs to be repercussions for what you say. You have to be accountable for what you say, and you cannot say that. You know, I just find that, you know, we've seen it with Ian Wright and different cases, but I think, you know, there needs to be an onus on some of the social media companies as well to police this an awful lot better.
Well, that's actually a point she made. So here's the second clip we were planning to play.
I would love to see social media platforms needing a form of ID just to verify your account. You know, there's a face and a name and address behind each account. So if something is said, something bad, like a threat is said, you can report that and then the social media platform can identify the person straight away, and rather than just block them off it for a period of time, they should be banned from using that social media platform again.
Before we move on, like, we're joking ourselves if we think that racism and xenophobia and everything else aren't societal problems. They are, and that's reflected in sport. And, like, let's be very honest. You mentioned the Ian Wright situation, which happened in this country not too long ago, and you still have situations where if certain players from certain clubs play in the Aviva Stadium, they are booed throughout the game. Mm. And, you know, there's been very high-profile incidents. Simon Zeebo spoke very openly about it after, wasn't it a game against, am I going to do Ulster a disservice, or was it a game in Belfast at one stage?
I can't remember.
But I'll double check that in case I'm doing a disservice. But, like, it's And I know the argument will be made, well, why post a picture of yourself on social media in a balaclava talking about Irish history? But James's argument from, you know, chatting to Claire this morning after they played out the interview with Aaron was basically, you know, when you get to what I've got to, you know, you know, you've put up with so much, you're vulnerable, you're going to do things like that.
Yeah. The thing for me, honestly, as a player, you can live with anyone being honest about your performance, or even when you play well, having a dig still, you can live with that kind of stuff. But, you know, stuff like this, you know, he can't control this, or he can't do anything about, you know, or nor should he be any bit, you know, you know, not proud to be where he's from and have his values and what he believes in, if that's important to him. And I'll be honest with you, Damien, I saw an awful lot in Worcester when I went over, even just small little things, people with different religions, different backgrounds, different beliefs. It is a melting pot, and you just have to be acceptable to everyone and realise where they're coming from. And I think it's just a respect thing more so than anything.
Yeah, just to clarify, Ulster handed a lifetime ban to a spectator after an investigation into abuse which was directed at Simon Zeebo during a Champions Cup game that was in January of 2019. So, anyway, will we move on and chat about sport?
Absolutely, yeah.
Brilliant. We are going to chat soccer an awful lot to look back on in a couple of big games tonight. Lisa Fallon is with us. Hi, Lisa.
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad at all. The most important thing, Liverpool are back.
You've been waiting to say that, haven't you?
I know, come here, I'm building a rod for my own back. Come here, Liverpool, very impressive last night. But when you break it down and you analyse it and everything else, two teams who press the life out of each other, and RB Leipzig are going to be left to reflect on two defensive errors which have given Liverpool the advantage now ahead of the second leg.
Yeah, look, 100%. I think it was a very good result for Liverpool. But as you said, more importantly, it was actually a really good performance. They've been out of form, but last night they were kind of back doing things that we've become used to seeing Liverpool do, like playing at that high tempo, like just going in, pressing really high, pressing aggressively, forcing errors and finishing quite ruthlessly as well. And to be fair, we got to see that both goals coming from the errors, as you said, from Salah and Mane, especially the first one, which came from some brilliant Liverpool pressing. But I suppose as well, like they've had players who've been under scrutiny, particularly Alisson. And I know some of his touches when the ball went back to him a little bit were, you know, he probably still looks a little bit edgy in that. But, you know, that save he made from Christopher Nkunku just after half time when in the 1v1, you know, it was a massive one because the game was still at 0-0 at that point, and, you know, it was a big save. And, you know, I think for him mentally as well, it was probably the clean sheet was probably really important. And for Liverpool as well, that they got back into a little bit more what we're renowned as seeing Liverpool do, and the way that they perform. And I think, you know, that performance probably sets them up nicely now for of course, the big Merseyside derby on Saturday.
Lisa, from a manager's point of view, it must be nice to have a different competition of a great value as well, but just to freshen up the squad, the mindset, you know, being in the Premier League has been ruthless over the last while for Liverpool, so this win will give further confidence.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, like as you say, just sometimes having a different competition to focus on, it just changes the focus and the mindset. And particularly probably in a week where, to be fair, Jurgen Klopp conceded the league, really. So I suppose the Champions League is probably Liverpool's only real chance of actually winning a trophy now. And I suppose that probably gives it a little bit more resurgence and, as you say, just a slightly different focus, and it can give you a little bit more energy. And, you know, that showed in their performance last night, and I thought they were really good.
Just the other game last night, we're a little bit pressed for time, so we'll drive on. There'll be plenty of chance to wax lyrical about Liverpool in the coming weeks, all going well. The second game last night, people talked about Champions League elite in Barcelona against the great pretenders in PSG, but was last night a reminder not only of the brilliance of Kylian Mbappe, but of the rebuilding job that somebody has to take by the scruff of the neck at Barcelona to try and get them back to that level of Europe's top elite?
Yeah, like I think, look, it was a masterclass from Mbappe. Probably the first time really that he's starting to move into that next bracket in terms of being classed as one of the best in the world, and fairly so, like being included in comparisons with the likes of Messi and Ronaldo. And I mean, he scored the three goals, but it could have been more, only for Ter Stegen. And like, we have to remember, he's still only 22. Like, he scored 110 goals. And he's already the third top scorer in PSG's history, behind Cavani. I think he's 200, and Ibrahimovic is on 156. But I mean, I loved the quote from Pochettino actually after the game about him, where he said, "Yesterday at training, he asked me how many times I had won at the Camp Nou, and once I told him, he replied to me, 'Tomorrow we're going to win a second time.'" I just love that mindset that he has. But I think having that mindset as well is probably an indication as well as to where Barcelona actually are, and that people go there feeling that they can win now, and that there is that shift. And I mean, it's a massive, massive rebuilding job that they have there, quite unenviable really, but it's a massive job that they have to do, and it's going to take time. And we're seeing that now, that it is going to take time. And you look at Manchester United in the post-Alex Ferguson era, how long it took and how many managers it took, and they're still not quite there yet. So, you know, a big legacy like that can be really difficult to recreate if you don't maintain it consistently as you're going, and nurture it, you know, as often as you need to. And if you start to take that talent for granted.
Yeah, at least the flip side of it is PSG are trying to create that. Were you impressed with what Pochettino is doing there? Do you think they could make a run at it this year and win the Champions League?
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, I saw quite a few of their games last year, you know, towards the end of Thomas Tuchel's era. And you know, they were a little bit disjointed. There was, you know, talk of difficulties with players and clashes in the dressing room and all that type of stuff. But you know, sometimes it just takes a fresh face to come in and change that. And, you know, that looks to be what Pochettino has done. That was my first time actually to see PSG since he took over. And I was really impressed. You can see there's a different vibe about them, the different style of play, similar actually to what Tuchel has done at Chelsea. But yeah, look, I think Pochettino is well schooled, and he's really experienced in the Champions League, obviously, with what he did at Tottenham. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what he does at PSG. He's certainly going to have more resources and access to probably higher budget players. So I think it's going to be actually quite exciting to see what he does there, because the opportunity, the drive, the ambition and the will and the finances are there. So it'll be interesting to see what he does.
The games tonight, Porto play host to Juventus, Sevilla against Dortmund, both those games off at 8 o'clock. If we just switch attention briefly to the English Premier League, Burnley in action at home to Fulham, scoreless after 20 minutes. Everton at home to Manchester City later on. Lisa, if we look at this with a kind of a cold-hearted analytical eye, you've Sheffield United, West Brom, Fulham, and then a 6-point gap to Newcastle outside the relegation zone. So realistically, that business is done and dusted, isn't it?
Oh, it's hard to see how it's going to change. It's so difficult. But you have to say, like, you look at the teams, and even West Brom's result the last day against Manchester United, you know, there's teams in there that are still going to take points, and every point that they get is going to be colossal, really, at this stage in the run-in. But yes, I think you're right. I think it's very difficult to see at this stage how all three or any of the three will get out of it and create any space of safety. I think it is going to be that three, it looks like that at the moment, that will go down. But having said that, I was really impressed with West Brom. I think the new signings that they've brought in, and Dina has, you know, he looks a real player. And I think, you know, West Brom could possibly do something. I think Allardyce is so well schooled and getting teams out of the mire, and he's got some fresh faces in, and those players are going to embed, and they'll help him change the culture that he probably needs to change. So I think it'll be interesting to see how West Brom do. I'd say if there was one team I thought might get out of it, they would be the team.
What about Fulham, though? They've managed to get an awful lot of draws, brilliant performances, but just struggling to get that winning results at the critical time. They're close enough to kind of pulling away from it. Is tonight against Burnley the opportunity to make a run?
Yeah, possibly, but you know, I think, you know, you look at the team, they're still without a couple of key players, and you know, Mitrovic is a big player for them, and he's out now. So listen, the key thing about this type of battle is having the resilience to keep going if results are not going your way. And you're right, they have been getting draws, and draws are better than nothing. But you know, I just have a good feeling about West Brom, that I think there's potential there for them to get a bit of momentum. They've been at rock bottom for such a long time, and I think if anyone gets out, it might be them. But you know, Scott Parker is a really good manager, and you know, he I like the way he tries to get them to play. But again, it's dog eat dog, and you know, it's about tiny margins now, and about having the quality to capitalise on the tiny little moments in games when you get those opportunities to get the goal or to squeeze a point out of it. And it'll be listen, it's going to be very interesting, but I think it's going to be difficult for any of those three to really get out. But like I say, if I'm going to tip one to get out, I'll stick with West Brom.
Okay, we have it on tape. But then we look at the top end of the table. Like, you know, we won't waste too much time talking about Manchester City being champions in waiting, but if you look at, like, particularly, you know, David Moyes has to be a contender for manager of the year if West Ham can maintain the form that they're on. You know, we would have talked at the start of the year about West Ham being potential relegation candidates, so now we're talking about them potentially being Champions League or certainly Europa League qualifiers. And likewise, Everton, Ancelotti must be looking at that. 3 points behind Liverpool, 2 games in hand, a massive opportunity to get one up on the other side of the city.
Yeah, it is, but I think Everton are without Dominic Calvert-Lewin again tonight, and he's a big miss for them. I mean, I think he got a hamstring injury against Fulham at the weekend, and he's a loss for them, and I'm sure they'd be hopeful to have him back for the weekend. But I think it's a tough ask for Everton to get a win or to even get anything out of Man City tonight. You know, the form that Man City are in, you know, Man City are going for that record tonight. I know they're probably not talking about it and talking it down, but they're the only team that have won their 9 Premier League matches in 2021, and they become potentially the first team in the top flight history to win their opening 10 games in a calendar year, which would break Manchester United's record back in 2009. So there's an incentive there in that for them. But I just think they're in such good form, and Kevin De Bruyne has been back in training. Sergio Aguero could be involved again tonight. Like, so, you know, they've been on this run without top quality, you know, missing some real quality players, and they're just relentless. So do I see Everton winning tonight? I don't. But I think you're right about David Moyes. I think the job he's done at West Ham this year has been absolutely incredible. And again, they're a little bit like Leicester City. Everyone's looking at them in there and just kind of expecting at some point that they're going to slip away. They just haven't. So I said it before, but the battle for those top four places for Champions League spots is going to be insane, I think, over the next few weeks. And it, you know, every point is a crucial one. And you know, Liverpool, I still don't think they're done yet. I think they'll bounce back, and I think the result last night will help them, and as will the performance. But I think it's certainly interesting. Ancelotti has done an unbelievable job as well. I think he's been brilliant since he's gone in there, and you know, he's revitalised Everton. But I don't expect them to win tonight, and whether or not they can beat Liverpool, I think they're two massive games for Everton. If they got out of either of these games with points, I think that would be brilliant for them, but I just don't see it.
Lisa, we were chatting about James McLean, and we're seeing as well in the Football League referee Darren Dreisen involved in a confrontation with Ireland and Ipswich midfielder Alan Judge. Just from your experience on the touchline, just how much of that kind of goes on that we wouldn't probably see on the TVs, the kind of verbals on the pitch that can lead to those type of moments?
I think a lot goes on. I think a lot goes on in the game setting. I think a lot goes on away from the game setting. I think, you know, I'm certainly aware of people being subjected to messages like, you know, threatening, defaming, intimidating, you know, abusive. You know, I got some of them myself a few years ago, and it's not nice when you're subjected to them. It certainly isn't, and it can be very lonely for players and coaches and referees as well, because, you know, sometimes I know some referees have made big decisions in big games and suffered terrible things as a result. But it comes back to that whole thing that it can affect people in awful ways. But I think the biggest thing is that something has to be done about it. People have to be made accountable for their actions on social media and what they say, whether that's in the public domain or through sending private messages to people, and also the abuse in the verbal abuse in that arena. Like, there seems to be a culture where people think it's okay to abuse people, and it's just not, and we have to get beyond that. And there is a culture shift for sure needed, but it certainly does have a massive impact on players, and you know, it's one of those ones where, you know, there was kind of a time where people sucked it up and just took it on board and, you know, were afraid to speak about it. That changed a bit, and then there was obviously maybe people would speak up about it and people would go, yeah, but look, that's just part of the game and you have to take a little bit of it on the chin and whether you deserve it or not. Like, but there's no excuse for that type of abuse. And I think, you know, now we're starting to move into an era where people are speaking out about and saying that's not acceptable and I'm not prepared to accept that, and that's exactly where we need to be. But I do think a lot more needs to be done in terms of making people accountable for their actions or for their words, and until people understand that there are consequences for that type of behaviour, then it will continue, because people will get, you get what you tolerate. And as a society and as an environment and an industry, if we tolerate that type of stuff, then we'll continue to get it. So we have to draw red lines down in terms of racism, sexism, sectarianism, all of it. It's just, it has to be stamped out. You can have a bit of rivalry and you can, you know, have you know, banter and all the rest of it with opposition players or players and stuff like that. But that type of hardcore abuse has just got to stop. It's not acceptable, should never be acceptable. And I just think, you know, as a society and as an industry, we've a lot to do. But I do think it's changing. But we have to be more proactive and be consistent with managing it and make it and helping to make sure that we just drive it out once and for all.
Yeah, absolutely, Lisa. I totally agree. Okay, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Lisa, before we go, a quick prediction for Burnley, Fulham and Man City and Everton tonight. How do you see those going?
Oh,
sorry.
I almost have to say Burnley now after talking Fulham down. So I'll go with Burnley, even though I'd worry about Ben me missing the game. And I've nailed my colours to the mast there on Man City. I think, you know, they're just so strong. They're flying. And I think Man City will win tonight.
Brilliant. Lisa, thank you for joining us and being so honest. We really appreciate it. Quick break and we're back chatting cricket.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. So we've been chatting on and off over the last couple of weeks about sports trying to find their way back into action, and sports that's going to have to endure a prolonged period in cold storage. But one sport that's certainly managing to drive on full throttle is cricket. And Cricket Ireland earlier this week announced a whole flurry of series of games with South Africa and Zimbabwe to take place in July and August, an away series against Holland as well, which will serve as part of the World Cup Super League, and the Irish Wolves as well preparing to depart to Bangladesh. So busy year and a busy couple of weeks ahead, and delighted to be joined as always by the Irish captain Andrew Balburney, who's with us. Andrew, how are you?
Very well, thanks. How are you doing?
Not too bad, thanks for your time. We spoke a couple of weeks back in advance of you departing to Afghanistan, and in many ways, you called at the time for an increase in games, an increase in playing the talent pool that's available. So confirmation of fixtures like this for the course of 2021, it must be like manna from heaven.
Yeah, it is. You know, you don't get the calibre of teams like South Africa coming here too often, particularly in the last couple of years when we haven't had any home internationals. So the fact that they're going to be over here for, you know, two formats, ODI and T20, is a great boost for us. I suppose, like anything in a sports schedule or any schedule at the moment, you've got to kind of just be wary that things could change, and they could change quickly. But to have them set in stone, if you like, and you mentioned the Wolves there, they headed off to Bangladesh today to play, I think it's 7 or 8 games. So we're very fortunate in cricket that we've been able to play games all around the world, and we're continuing to do so throughout the next few months.
So when we look at it, obviously the World Cup Super League will go towards World Cup qualification, so they're very, very important fixtures along the way. But with other, you know, the exposure to countries like South Africa, the exposure to, you know, seasoned cricketing nations, is it as much about, you know, learning from playing those teams and those countries at close quarters as it is about hopefully getting a W in the column for a win?
Yeah, it is. You know, it was last summer I was crying out for, I think after the game against England, we were crying out for more games on a regular basis against these top teams to show that we're not just a flash in the pan team. So we are now getting those fixtures. We knew we would in this World Cricket League, World Cup Qualifier Super League, and we are getting them on a regular basis. It didn't go well against Afghanistan recently, but the beauty of it is we've got another series or two to look forward to this summer. So hopefully we can turn that around. And yeah, like you say, playing international sport, you want to pit yourself against the best teams from all around the world, and South Africa are certainly one of those. They've been there, thereabouts, consistently over the last number of years. They haven't come to Ireland since 2007, so it's a great opportunity for us, a relatively young and inexperienced group, to have a good crack at them come July.
Andrew, you mentioned that there, it's brilliant to have those schedules and those fixtures to look forward to, but what fills the void now in that time to get ready in preparation? We saw Munster Reds have been added to the 50s over Cup, so now 4 teams in that. Is it into domestic sides, or will you have training camps? How do you prepare?
Yeah, well, fortunately, there's about 8 or 9 guys who are in and around the senior squad who have headed off today to Bangladesh for that Wolves trip, which is brilliant. The more those young guys can go out and play in tough conditions against a really quality opposition will be great. There's only about five of us now based in Ireland, maybe a bit more. So it'll just be a matter of getting back to basics in the indoor school out in North County Cricket Club, working hard in the gym 3 or 4 times a week. Like you said, the Interpro structure has taken a restructure, if you like, with Munster coming into the 50-over competition. And basically the best are going to be playing against the best. All the players, there's going to be a pool of about 45 players, the best players in the country, and they're going to be pitted in 4 teams, spread across the 4 teams. So that's really exciting. That'll happen throughout May. But from now until then, it's just kind of getting back into the indoor school and getting training and working on basics so that once the season comes around, we're ready to hit the ground running.
Andrew, how important is that, though, that we have our domestic game as strong as we possibly can? So there's avenues for boys and girls that are seeing it, or, you know, there's a club for them to go, or there is more awareness around it that they can get out and play.
100%. You know, we don't have the luxuries of other sports in this country, so we've got a small pool of players. But what we do have to make sure is that these players are playing at that level as often as possible. Us in Dublin, Leinster, we've had great success in the Interpro competition. But we've also had 5 or 6 young guys who haven't been able to get into our team, who haven't been playing in the competition. And there have been maybe other players playing for the other teams that probably aren't as good as those players who haven't played. So it's important that those guys get the opportunity. Bringing in a team like Munster for the 50-over competition, albeit there might not be a lot of Munster players in the team, what it does, it creates a brand and it creates a team down there, so that if a young Irish international is playing for Munster, then a young guy from Cork or Limerick or Tipperary or wherever it is wants to go and watch them play for their team. So I think it's got a great knock-on effect, and I think we're going to see a really strong Interpro season this year, which will only benefit the country as a whole.
Just, Andrew, like, obviously, you know, alluded to it at the top, that we're still in this level of uncertainty where, you know, like, the Pro 14 can plough on as a professional system and the League of Ireland is continuing on. Like, how important is it just for cricket just to get back up and running again, particularly, you would hope, across the summer months, just to, you know, try and harness that interest is there, because it's like a lot of things in life. If you lose people at a young age, it's very, very difficult to get them back.
Yeah, and that kind of goes to my last point about the kind of guys who aren't involved in the Leinster setup. They're of an age, you know, 18, 19, 20, where decisions have to be made whether they want to go to a way to travel for a year, they want to go study abroad or whatever that is, and they're losing players. And that's always been the case with cricket. So we've got to make sure that we can harness those guys. We were quite fortunate in the sense that, you know, last year at the end of the first lockdown, there was some sort of a season, and hopefully this season coming will have some sort of a season. So, you know, you look at rugby, maybe like the Ulster Bank League, they've been really hit because it's been the whole season, if you like. Whereas we're kind of lucky because we have the two summers that potentially won't have been as effective as the winter. But yeah, we're always up against it as a sport. We've got to make sure that we're doing everything we can. And I've said it numerous times, us as players, if we produce results, if we get big wins against teams like South Africa, that'll only raise the bar of what we're trying to do and raise the profile of the sport, which is so important to us.
Yeah, well, we wish you well with the weeks and months ahead. As always, Andrew, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, great to speak to you.
Andrew Balbirnie there, the Irish cricket captain. We've a text in, Dunica, to 51552 from Paul, who's a Liverpool fan, saying Jurgen Klopp will be at Barcelona next season.
Whoa, there's
so
a
good
way.
That's Paul, who's predicting next year's Champions League draw, because that's the only way I can see that happening.
Cat among the pigeons there, Paul, fair play to you.
We've a break to take, and we are going to chat about the concluding days of Australia's big sporting event of the calendar year, the Australian Open, after this.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Fern's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide. Game on.
Tennis. Come back up to now with it. It's been all chat about quarantining athletes, players slagging matches, but today the Australian Open really did kick off, and we're delighted to be joined by Stephen Higgins from Cross Court View. Stephen, how are you?
I'm okay. I was up all night watching tennis, so I'm raring to go.
Well, it was brilliant today, wasn't it? And I suppose we want to look ahead, but it would be wrong not to look at Nadal today crashing out and looking to go on and win his 21st. Not anymore. He'll have to wait.
It's the perils of the five-set format. It's a long time that you have to stay at a good enough level to make it. And for two sets, Nadal was on a different level altogether to Stefanos Tsitsipas. But the thing about the Greek is he keeps at it, as he's proven going back to when he had a five-set epic with Stan Wawrinka at the French, that he can keep going for 4 hours, 5 hours, at an incredible level. So he hung in there, and then remarkably Nadal's level dropped, and then he took full advantage. And what was surprising, so has been Nadal, I think it's only the third time in his career that he's lost from two sets up. But he looked tired, and I don't know if that's the effect of the pandemic or age or all of it combined.
Hey, that's a really interesting point. Are you noticing parts in certain players' games, you know, maybe not as consistent as they would have once been?
Yeah, I think the tells, I was thinking about this earlier, the tells for the top three guys, for Nadal, when his forehand starts coming really short, you can tell that he's tense and he's getting nervous. And when he had periods in his career when he wasn't playing well, the forehand, which is, you know, one of the greatest shots ever, was letting him down. And as the seesaw moved in the match earlier, I saw his forehand get shorter and shorter as the tension was kind of rising. With Djokovic, around the net, obviously is an issue for him. And for Federer, it's the backhand really governs how well he's going to do in terms of if he's really hitting through it and getting easy winners, or if it's letting him down, particularly on returns. So even the top three guys have tells. But with Nadal, I think it's just amazing how he turned from being completely in control of the match, playing brilliantly well, to errors, just errors out of nowhere, and then fair play to Tsitsipas for taking advantage.
I wonder, Stephen, as well, what impact has the lack of crowds played in some of these matches as well? That you think about, you know, I think the point was being made about Ashleigh Barty along the way, that it would have given her such a lift towards the tail end of the tournament if fans, having again endured the 5-day lockdown, got back in. Obviously disappointment for her, but you just wonder some of those momentum swings that have now happened, had a crowd been there, been on a player's back or been behind another player, how different some of it might have been?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case of for Ash Barty. I felt sorry for her that an Australian, obviously competing to get into the semi-finals of her home Grand Slam, and there's zero people in the stadium to see her. When she went off the boil against Muhova in the second set, clearly if there were 10,000 roaring Aussies there, they could have helped her through that. On the flip side, Sophia Kenin, the defending champion, played before no crowd and admitted afterwards she struggled. Now, she's since gone for surgery for appendicitis, but she said at the time after her match that she couldn't handle the pressure of having to defend and there weren't fans. But then you saw, say, with Nick Kyrgios, that in his epic win over Dominic Thiem in five sets, that it, you know, the crowd certainly took him over the finish line because he loves that environment. He loves the boisterous, loud environment.
There's a sports psychology student somewhere that is preparing a master's thesis or a PhD thesis on home advantage in the absence of crowds in recent weeks. If we move it on to tomorrow, the early hours of tomorrow morning, I'm presuming you've the alarm already set for... Well, I was going to say 2:45, but it's a 3 o'clock start. So realistically,
yeah,
the alarm is set for 2:59. The Naomi Osaka, Serena Williams, the first of the women's semi-finals. You've mentioned with Karolina Muchova against Jennifer Brady in the second semi-final. Dare I suggest that the de facto Australian Open final is that first semi-final between Osaka and Williams at 3 a.m.?
I think it's hard to make a huge argument. What I would say is that Jennifer Brady, I would expect Jennifer Brady to beat Muhova. Muhova's a brilliant player who I really love watching. She's very versatile, but I was concerned about her nerves in the quarter with Barty. Brady is really solid, and bear in mind she's backing up a semi-final at the US Open where she took Osaka to three sets. So I wouldn't write her off entirely, but yes, Osaka is, I think, the best player in the world, and obviously the only one who could compete is Serena Williams if she can play at a level like she has in the past. And luckily for her, I think she's playing the best she's played since the 2017 Australian Open that she won.
But Osaka, like, she's got ice water running through her veins. I was on Morning Ireland yesterday morning, and obviously she'd won overnight. I'm thinking, here, I'll get a clip of this now, I'll play this at 8:30. She is so laid back and relaxed that she's more than horizontal.
Yeah, well, she's a great personality off the court. She always had been, but I think there's a confluence of events for her in terms of she has been at the forefront of the campaigning for race equality, and she's passed the hurdle in tennis where she won her first major, she backed it up with a second major, and then she won a third major, and now she's in this nice, like, for want of a better term, cruising period where there is no pressure anymore. She's been world number one, she's three majors, how many more can she add? So I think she's in a really comfortable place in her life and in her career where she's just trying to accumulate slams.
Stephen, looking ahead, it's going to be an incredible 4 days. Just the men's semi-finals, how do you see that going?
Well, I think Aslan Karatsev, who has taken the tournament by storm, that the Karatsev conundrum will be solved by Novak Djokovic, I'd imagine. So Novak's into his ninth Australian Open semi-final, and he has never lost from this stage before. I think that will continue against Karatsev. Oh, fun fact about Karatsev. In his career, he's made $618,000. In the last fortnight, he's made $659,000.
But is he happy, Stephen? Is he happy?
But I'd say he's pretty happy. And then in the other one, I think is brilliant, but I would suggest Medvedev, Tsitsipas, you know, big emotional toil with the Nadal win. The turnaround will be hard. Medvedev is just astonishing at the moment. He's on a 19-match winning streak going back to November of last year. He looks better than he ever has, and I really think that he can beat Tsitsipas, and dare I say, could beat Djokovic in the final as well. He's playing that well.
Great call. Brilliant. We better leave you get to bed so that you can enjoy us getting up early. Stephen, as always, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Quick break, and we're chatting to four of the best hurdlers in the country.
Are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour. Game on. GAA.
GAA.
Andrew, welcome back to the programme. We obviously this week, I think the GAA's annual report for 2020 might have overshadowed an awful lot of Gaelic Games chat, and it might have been easy to miss the fact that the GAA announced their various teams of the year for the Joe McDonagh, Christy Ring, Nicky Rackard and Laurie Marr, and their players of the year as well, and it's something that we wanted to mark. So between now and the end of the programme, we are going to whip around Antrim, Kildare, Donegal and Louth to chat to some of the players involved, and delighted to say we're joined first off by the Joe McDonagh Cup Player of the Year, the Antrim captain, Conor McCann. Conor, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Doing well.
Thanks for being with us. I'm looking back over, I think you and I last spoke on the steps of the Cusack stand after the Joe McDonagh Cup final, and a year that saw you win that, win the league, gain promotion, everything along the way. 2020, you're probably one of the few people in the country that if you could relive it in an instant, you probably would want to.
Yeah. I finished really well now, so we'll not complain. So
from your perspective now, I suppose 2021 can't roll around fast enough in terms of the championship and an opportunity to test yourselves against the very best in the Liam McCarthy.
Yeah, that's it. We're looking forward to hearing hopefully some good news about fixtures and stuff like that soon. Hopefully, so we'll be able to, I suppose, plan ahead and try and get some momentum built up again. So we're just looking forward to getting back.
How important is it for Antrim to get back to that top tier and test yourselves and be exposed to the best teams in the country?
It's vital for Antrim, you know, and that was our big drive last year, was to try and get back to Division 1, really, you know, and playing consistently week in, week out against the best teams. So, no, I think all the lads are ready and they're looking forward to it, you know, but it's just we just need a green light or some sort of target to aim towards now, you know.
Okay, we're going to go to Kildare. Paul Dively is with us. Paul, how are you?
Good, thanks for having me.
Congratulations. I know people will talk about it being a team game, but these personal accolades are nice along the way as well.
Yeah, definitely. Monday morning I got a phone call off the GPA rep in Murphy. I wasn't expecting it. Yeah, it was a nice Monday morning during the lockdown now. I must admit I had a bit of a grin on my face all day. So, yeah, they're nice to have. Obviously, we don't play it for them, but still nice to get them, yeah.
How big a year was it for Kildare?
It was huge. I suppose earlier in the year, we missed out on score difference to a league final, and we were pretty disappointed about that, but we knew we were very close on the teams that we were going to come up against in the ring. We were confident that on our day, if we played the way we could, we have the beating of them, or else we can compete very strongly against them. And it kind of showed that way, I suppose. Down probably took out the competition favourites in Offaly. And we'd lost it Down by a point or two in the league back in March. So we knew it was going to be a very tight game, and it proved that way. Like, so it was a great year now overall. We were just delighted to come out with it and finally get promoted up to the Joe McDonagh.
Before I move on, like, I suppose, Dunnick is going to chat to the Nicky Rackard and Laurie Marr winners, but I suppose, are you in that situation of uncertainty about what the year lies in store, or, you know, are you left kind of wondering what the structure will be for 2021?
Yeah, I suppose, look, everyone's in the same boat. We're all set up, I suppose. It's kind of, we all want answers, but we are all realistic, knowing that there's no answer to be got at the moment, and we kind of just have to wait on public health advice, like, you know. So I suppose it is frustrating in one sense, and then the other sense, when you look at the bigger picture, you're just kind of like, look, we'll take it as it comes. We're still training away on it by ourselves, so kind of doing as much as we can, kind of just I suppose just rolling with the punches at the moment. That's all we can do, really, like, you know. So keep the positive best foot going forward and see how we get on, like, looking forward to the year ahead, whatever way it unfolds.
Congratulations, Paul, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, we're heading to Donegal. We're delighted to be joined by Danny Cullen. Danny, how are you? Danny? Any sign of him?
He's there. Say hello one more time. You might.
Danny, how are you?
Hello.
I'm very good. Congratulations on your award, the Nicky Rackard Player of the Year. It's brilliant to have the recognition, Danny, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great now, especially kind of when you're pushing on into the wrong side of 30, like, you know, just to and get an award, you know. So delighted about it, to be honest with you.
Because people don't see the amount of sacrifices, the time. Of course, you know, recognition comes maybe in different, you know, ways, but to be applauded by your peers and people around and be recognised like this is nice.
Yeah, that's it. And especially now this year too, when I was kind of selected by your peers and other managers, you know, too, it's kind of, that was a kind of extra joy if you get it, like, so just really delighted with the whole thing, to be honest with you.
What does it mean to you as a squad now, these kind of moments? What are you doing at the moment to keep going? We know everyone's isolating, but to keep morale, Danny, what are you doing?
Well, basically just all the kind of, you know, the programmes are set out there, like, so it's just kind of to try and get into them, like, and just, you know, just kind of keep the positive too and try to think that maybe in a month or 2 months' time you might get some kind of idea of where we're going to be for the year, like, be it the club or county going ahead, like, but look, at the end of the day, we kind of, last year we were very fortunate even to get hurling at all, so I think this year could be something of the same, but look, hopefully over time now we'll get an idea and get back on the playing pitch, like.
Absolutely. We're also joined by Andrew Mackin. Andrew, load, how are you keeping, how are you getting on? Congratulations, player, on your incredible award. It must be a great one to have.
Thank you. How are you, Donegan? Obviously, yeah, thank you very much. It's great to get personal awards. They're a bonus, I suppose. You go out and you try and win matches, try and win competitions, and anything after that is a bonus. But delighted.
It is nice to get something, though, to just, you know, a bit of personal recognition. I know from my own playing pools, when guys made teams of the year, you were really proud for them in their playing group. It reflects everyone else.
Absolutely, and the lads were on straight away. Everyone's been very supportive. Some lovely messages, some phone calls, and stuff like that. So, yeah, no. Hopefully, if we can bring a positive effect into the team, it'll be great. Yeah.
Andrew, we were chatting to Damien Lawler yesterday. He mentioned the finance. From a player's point of view, does this lead to doubt about how seasons could run out, or do you just put that out of your control and look at what you can do?
Yeah, well, I suppose, from my own point of view, you just want to go out and you want to play games and that. But I suppose, yeah, you could question, is it sustainable to have games like that behind closed doors if they're losing money 2 years in a row? So, look, we'll hopefully, as the year goes on, things might kind of turn around and we'll get playing games and that, but it's hard to know at this stage, I suppose.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll see them all soon, but congratulations on your awards, Andrew, Danny, Paul and Connor. Fantastic, an achievement, and let's hopefully see you out there very soon. Damien, we're pushing close on time.
Time to go. Yes. I will chat to you tomorrow.
Yes.
I have a mission between now and Friday from my eldest to finally get you to let slip who wins Ireland's for this family. So I failed today. Anyway,
keep trying.
Time for us to depart. Thanks to Laura Lee Davies, who was our broadcast coordinator. Andrew O'Connor produced. From all of us until we chat again tomorrow. Good night.